space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! October 26th. And what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Well, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course! Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars! This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts? Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. thinking is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, welcome to the Mad Science Show. Hope you're all doing well out there. We got a few links posted over in the shazizradio.com/superchat.html and over on the Wake Radio side as well. We've got my buddy Raymond and Muddy on here, and we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Now, first off, these links in the chat room have to do with guys like John Bedini. He's working on a Zero Force motor and Lid motor, who's doing replications of John Bedini's work, and also Tin Man up there is doing work on the same projects and stuff. But the key point of putting all this in there, and the final video down there, which was... Doggone it. The Dynaflux Alternator by Jim Murray. All these things have something in common, and trying to point this out is that these electric motors that these guys are working on, they got a lot of brilliance in them. The Dynaflux alternator was because everybody knows what the back EMF and the lens effect causes whenever you're trying to run a generator and it bogs down. Well, essentially, they're trying to figure it different ways in order to make electric motors more efficient at the very least, and actually at some point be able to build a motor generator that is self-charging. And I believe it's fully possible. Of course, you're going to have to get past all the politics of alternative energy in order to be able to accomplish this goal, and then you're going to have to bring people to the table that are willing to work together and get things done. Otherwise, it's just all, you know, hype. So, you know, with that said, the Dynaflux that, what's the dude's name again? Jim Murray worked on has a rotor in there that is kind of spiral shaped, and the way that it functions, it doesn't give the back EMF or the magnetic flux a chance to take full effect and start acting like a brake. And that's what I've been talking about for some time. If you could actually get past invoking Lenz's law, period, then you can make a really efficient generator. I've tried to share an idea about taking the energy away from the generator head with the people, but so far the concept hasn't really took root, so to speak. But anyway, in the alternative energy world, there are so many different possibilities out there. Off air before we started the show today, Raymond was talking about LED technology for new retrofits, so to speak, of the fluorescent lighting. So you're getting a different type of lighting that you're actually using in the same type of outlet or whatever. But regardless of all that, we're all talking about efficiency, because as he was pointing out in between the show there, that the majority of the waste energy that we've got out here has to do with lighting, because, you know, that's why your mom is always telling you, turn the light off, you know, your mom or dad, either one. So, you know, I'm on the crazy side of things. I believe that you can leave your lights on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year if you've done the system correctly, but we'll just have to work our way towards that. So with that said, hi guys, how you doing?
Excellent. Having a ball. Morning, Bill.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Pretty having good. A ball. So, two things going on here. In this particular show, we kind of brought up the subject of lighting, and we brought up the subject of these more energy efficient electric motor generators that people are working on. You know, if you've ever watched some of Lid Motor's work, some of his he calls himself Lid Motor because he makes these little tiny motors. He's made static motors and easy spin motors, and kind of duplicates everybody's motor work out there on a really super small scale. But these things are really super impressive in the fact that even though they don't have a lot of torque to them per se, and they're on a small scale, the efficiency is what they're working on, trying to get these things down into the milliamps and the millivolt range, and running them off of super capacitors and stuff like that. And I've been saying all along that high voltage, you can do a lot with high voltage if you understand what's going on there. It's not it's not running electricity in the same sense that you would be if you know, like you do it not right now. You go flip the light switch on, you got 60 hertz and a lot of current going through there, and you're running tungsten element light bulbs, resistive loads and non-resistive loads, and so on and so forth. But if you understand that whenever that energy is going through that LED technology, for example, it's not looking for a lot of current, watts and amps and all that kind of stuff. It's looking for, all it wants is when that material senses electron flow, it releases photons of light. So, with that said, too much energy and you'll burn that LED right out instantaneously. That's why they put resistors on those systems. But
you know what? Sure is. There's so many people out there that hear you talk and start cutting you down, and they don't even realize it. Never dawns on them what you're trying to say because they're so busy thinking about what the way they think that they're not interested in listening to you and what you say. I've listened to you because I don't know the first thing about electricity or electronics. I listen to you and I've tried what you say and it works and you are 100% correct and the idiots that think you're dumb or stupid are idiots. I mean,
that's because they don't listen to the show.
What you're talking about is everything. It's there. My God, it's voltage.
Yeah, if you just run your entire lighting system alone, if you took your entire lighting system off the power grid and just restrung you some wires around safely, you know, through conduit and all that kind of stuff right there, you could make a single wire system with as many LEDs as you could stretch out, and by running that thing at the right frequency, you can light up every single one of those LEDs on the same power source and still be able to connect it into where you're using switches, because you could actually have a switch that would have a bypass for the next strain, kind of like the way Christmas tree lights work. You remember those?
Yes.
One bulb goes out, half the strand goes off, but the other half is still on?
Right.
Yeah, pretty much the same concept, but either way, you're going to get cheaper, more efficient lighting using the LED technology that they have available today. You know, I'm surprised that more people hadn't really thought about, a dual system as far as your energy uses. For your heavy-duty resistive load, such as maybe your stove or your refrigerators or whatever, anything that's going to have to, you know, pull a little bit of a draw the moment it starts up, then you'd have that on your mains system. And for all your lighting purposes, you can run it on high voltage, you know, because it's not gonna draw a lot. And a lot of this you could actually do using a solar power system that's going to charge up a battery bank and, you know, run a little high voltage inverter like the oil burner igniter. Oil burner igniter, believe it or not, actually has too much power for what I'm talking about. You've seen that. You got to be careful with those things.
Yes, you know? Do. Trust me, I've played around with a few. Golly, it's way more power than you actually need. It's unreal.
Yeah. You know, a static electricity, a lot of people overlook the power of static electricity, but if you actually go back and look through some of my videos, I got one out there that says 1.5 volt Tesla coil. You're getting wireless energy transfer with static electricity. And right. So, you know, with that said, the only thing those LEDs are looking for is electron flow. They could care less about, any current flow to it. No, they're not looking for that. They're not looking for a rapid speed. All they need is electron flow in order to interact with that material and release photons of light. That's how the LED technology works. That's why you're able to literally take an LED, hold it up in a wireless field, and all you got for the ground is your fingers holding it up in the air, and you can light an LED up. And Muddy used to do this years ago with his radio technology. He'd hook a coil of wire to an LED and hang it on his garage, and when his buddy was getting close with the CB radio, he could tell by how close his buddy was by how bright the doggone bulb was.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I had a variable resistor because when he started getting closer, I had to turn the resistance up to keep from blowing the LED.
Yeah.
Power in that radio signal.
So that's some brilliant technology, and if you take away from something, there are people that my buddy Steve come on here, and he's talking about how the overseas they take these 2-liter bottles and they fill them up with either mineral oil or some sort of clear liquid like bleach water or whatever, and they will cut a hole in the roof and mount these inside the roof, and basically refract the sunlight in from outside in, and it's totally 100% free lighting. You know, why pay for an electric bill during the daytime if you can just use some system like that? Well, imagine if you took the same exact concept. You could literally pipe your lighting around your house through tubing and stuff, because that light is going to follow that water. You know what I mean? Just like a refractor, just like fiber optics. It's going to follow that light around, water.
You know, the thing is, there's so much technology out there that is not being used. You got to start somewhere. And let's start with the LEDs. I mean, somebody, weird, mad scientist came up with the idea, well, let's take a bunch of LEDs and put them in a plastic or clear glass tube, and see if we can't make a 4-foot fluorescent light fixture replacement. Duh, they've been around for 10 years.
Yeah.
Nobody even knows about them.
Well, imagine if you could use the same exact light bulb to light your entire house. You know?
Yeah, but you keep thinking about house. I keep thinking about reality. Big, huge buildings, $30, $40, $50,000 worth of electricity every month.
Well, it could be done.
The LED fluorescent light replacements, they could reduce the actual figures of lighting itself is 44% savings by replacing fluorescents with LEDs. However, if you stop and think about the reality of it, with LEDs, you don't have near the heat, so you actually start saving electricity, money, on air conditioning. So in reality, one more time, reality, LED fluorescent light replacement will save you over 50% of your electric bill. Think about that. 50%. Cut your electric bill 50%. It's going to take, if you retrofit all of your fluorescent light fixtures in a high-rise office building, you're going to recoup your money in 2 years.
Well, if you notice, big corporations like Walmart are falling that way.
It all boils down to money. Nobody owns a high-rise office building. High-rise office building is owned by a corporation, which is stocks. How about you stockholders start demanding that the company you're investing your money in make more profit simply by not throwing money away? Come on. The technology is there. Use it. It's there. I mean, Home Depot sells LED fluorescent light replacements for $18. All right, now all of a sudden you've got to hire electricians to retrofit the fixture to accommodate these LED fixtures. For the LED fixtures don't use ballast, and the ballast is where your heat is. So since they don't use a ballast and they don't produce heat, okay, you're gonna save on air conditioning. But now you paid $18 for a bulb, and there's four bulbs. Okay? Per fixture, that's $72. Now you got to pay an electrician $20, $25 per fixture, because he's going to charge you $60 an hour, and he's going to do two or three fixtures an hour. And now you get the cost up. If you do all of this, then it's going to take you 5 or 6 years to recoup your expense, when in reality, a company that specialized, absolutely specialized in nothing but replacing LED fluorescent lights with LED replacements, you can get the cost down. I've already done the figures. I've done it for the past 2 or 3 weeks. I've been working strictly on that. You can get the cost down to where a company could recoup its expenses in 2 years or less.
That's brilliant technology.
I thought that was LEDs over incandescent.
Oh, golly, the cost of that's unreal. That's totally unreal. LEDs over incandescent, I mean, you would recoup your investment in 6 months. And think about it. 6 months, how long are you going to live? How long is your business going to be running? How many people are going to benefit by investing in your company because your company thought to save money that you could project into your prospect and your investors would make more money faster? I mean, come on. It's all about money. That's why we have gasoline. That's why we're not running electric automobiles today. It's money. The oil barons, I mean, they don't want to see oil go berserk or out of the question or obsolete. So they keep putting down electric automobiles, electric this, electric that. I mean, Shazia says high voltage, low amperage, and he's right. He's 100% right, and if possible, 117.5% correct. I mean, you know, the technology is here, people. Use it.
Well,
I am right now in the process of setting up a business. I've already set up Boomtown Power and Light, more power to the people, and that's exactly what I intend to do. Start a company that will try to talk large businesses into switching over to LEDs. Now, the thought here is, if we do this, we're going to put a lot of people out of work, people who make fluorescent light fixtures, blah, blah, blah. But think about how many jobs we're going to create for the people that actually make the LED light, fluorescent light replacement. That's a lot of jobs. Now, all of a sudden, you have all these people that you need to replace these lights and retrofit the fixtures. You're creating even more jobs. You're creating millions of jobs and saving energy at the same time.
Well, there's one other point to be made on what you're talking about as far as the LED goes, is that's the fluorescent bulbs have a tungsten element in there, which is a preheater for the gas inside that bulb. And so that in itself uses up a lot of energy, you know, and so with LED technology, it's not reliant on heating up the gas before you actually get the light. All it's looking for, once again, is electron flow. It couldn't care less about heat or anything like that. So you send the high voltage down through a massive strand of those LEDs, you're going to light them all up. It's as simple as that.
You know, the thing is, I did some experiments on your thing as far as lighting actual burnt-out fluorescent lights with high voltage, and it works. It works great. They don't light up as bright, but you get the benefit of being able to stretch that lower lumens over a longer distance, and it everything has drawbacks, and everything has benefits. And the benefit of using high voltage to light up burnout or even not burnout fluorescent lights, the benefits are fantastic if you think about it. To light up fluorescent lights with high voltage in an office building for office work would be almost ridiculous. But to use it in a warehouse so forklifts can get around and not bump into things, it is unbelievably energy saving. It's unreal. You could take an office warehouse where they've got an office area, take their fluorescent lights out, replace them with LEDs, they've got just as much light, using half the energy cost, take the fluorescent lights, put them out in the warehouse, run them up high, use a lousy $100 Beckett oil burner igniter, it light up 150, 200 bulbs. You've got enough light for people to see how to get around. I mean, people, I've said it 5 or 6 times, the technology is here.
Yeah, if they were to remodify those fluorescent bulbs to take out any kind of resistance, such as that tungsten element still inside that light bulb, even when it's burned out, but you're not using it, so it's not really needed in there. If you
exactly.
just had a method by which just to get the energy through that into that tube, then it would light up and probably get a lot more light out of it because it wouldn't be meeting any resistance down the strand, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I do. I understand completely.
So, just like the LED technology, you know, all it's looking for is that energy to energize the material that's inside there. You know, there's a phosphorescent or whatever kind of powder up inside those doggone fluorescent bulbs that is looking for that energy. And, you know, you got preheaters on them, so you'll notice that during the winter time, if your fluorescent lighting's cold, it takes a second before they come on, before they warm up. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Who else we got in here?
We got me and Bill.
How's it going, Bill? What do you think of all this madness?
I think he went to get some coffee.
Yeah, he's off to the coffee pot.
All
right, well, anyway, so...
The cool thing I see about LEDs is they are a non-linear device, which means the voltage goes up, the voltage goes up, the voltage goes up, no amps are flowing yet, then it gets to where it gets to the breakover voltage, and within a half a volt, you go from completely black to... you know, to full brightness, and if you go past that, then it, you know, you risk blowing it, because it has to hit that breakover voltage. Once it hits the breakover voltage, up to a half a volt pretty much consists of the whole knee of the graph of the power that it uses. So if you've got them hooked up to static, you got them hooked up to static or high voltage, everything... let's say they run in 3.6 volts. Everything above that 3.6 volts gets passed on. If you got them in like a series, if you've got them in a parallel, they're all going to, it's going to act more like a voltage regulator. If you got too much voltage, you can blow them off. But if you have something out in the air to bleed off, pretty much they'll all go immediately to high light. To its best light, the full brightness, and the rest just passes. So you can drop off voltage. Seems it's just voltage, not very many amps at all.
Right.
If you don't have more than 20 milliamps going, basically it's never going to get above 20 milliamps.
You know,
and that's the cool thing. Yeah, you can light up pretty much as many. If you got you got 1,000 volts here, man, you're gonna light a lot of LEDs.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility to design a circuit, because we have potentiometer and variac and other technologies, variable capacitor technologies, to where you can actually turn that volume down before you pump it through those LEDs. Because once again, it's just looking for the electron flow. It's only looking for a specific frequency, and when it has that specific frequency, you get light. So, you know, in all the systems that we're using out there, we're already pumping more energy into things that it doesn't require that much energy to run.
Right. Here's something going right along with what Boomer was saying there. You could replace everything with the LEDs and save yourself a lot of money. Now, that guy built his house in a pyramid shape. And he had a cable running from the very top all the way into the ground. And he decided he would disconnect it. It knocked him back 20 foot. That's just from the static buildup that thing had built up and taken, I guess, from being aligned to north and being in a pyramid. It knocked him back 20 foot. He was afraid to go near it So, yeah, he had a time getting it loose and getting it out of there. He said he won't do that again unless he's got it hooked up to something that's using it.
Right.
The cool thing is you can float something up into the air and get that static electricity from up there, and I'm pretty sure you could run that whole wire coming down with LEDs. And that would mean all your lighting is free.
Think about this a minute.
And if that's free, then you'd have three times...
Scott, let's think about this a minute. You got a 45-story building, and it's square, so it has four corners.
Well over 300 volts.
Right. Now, why couldn't you take a high-rise office building, run some copper wire just, you know, down the sides of the building, put some LED lights in, and light the building off its own power.
Right, or just put all the LEDs in series and tap them to ground.
Exactly. I mean, come on, folks. The technology, one more time, is here. Use it. I mean, come on. I mean, you can light an entire office building for free.
The
power to light is free, but not the lights and not the wire and not the insulation. That's going to cost some money.
As long as lightning don't hit them, they'll be fine.
The motor...
Exactly.
The motor generator technology out there, I'm really impressed. At the same time, kind of disappointed with all the alternative energy guys out here, because I'm watching the brilliance in some of these designs that they're making between pulse motors and things that they're doing with direct drive motors and X13s and stuff. Man, if you could only get these folks into a lab together to build the perfect motor generator, you would have more than enough power, and you could have this thing be self-contained. When I say self-contained, I'm talking about not putting all your eggs in one basket, such as, you know, you got solar panels out there, and they're talking about, well, the efficiency of solar panels is only such and such or whatever, because the sun's not all the way out. Well, you know, what we're talking about isn't taking that much. You know, it's really super simple to create high voltage. You know, it's just when you're talking about trying to force a lot of current through a wire or coils or whatever, you're going to be met with resistance because the lens effect kicks in there, and it starts to cut down on the efficiency because there's resistance going on, and it makes the thing have to work harder. And so on and so forth. So we already know all this stuff. So if you designed a generator specifically for nothing more than lighting in itself, that's it. You're not going to try to run your toaster on it. You're not going to try to run anything but just your lighting. With the LED technology, you've already got that part of the equation figured out. I mean, all it's looking for is electron flow. You know, when the electrons interact with the material inside the LED, it releases photons of light. And so, you know, it's ironically enough, and you can test this out there for yourself, go get a red LED, hook it to a voltmeter, put it down on the millivolt range, and hold it up to the sunlight. You can take that same LED, hook it to a capacitor, and hold it up to the sunlight, and you can watch the voltage going up into the volt range. All right, now can you run your doggone toaster off of it? No, it's blatantly obvious you can't. But you'll notice that the doggone voltage is going up there, and voltage is pressure.
You store it batteries and then decide to use it periodically.
Yeah, even at that, even if you was only using it as a supplemental system, to where during the daytime you leave your curtains open and have the sunlight coming in, and at nighttime you just run your LED lighting system, you're not going to be draining much off that battery bank, you know? And when you start draining amps, heavy-duty amperage off of it, of course it's going to go dry fast, you know? But if you're not drawing that much off of it, but you're still getting enough light to see what you're doing without smashing your toe and be able to read a book and all that kind of stuff, isn't that what you wanted to begin with? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I gotta put this point across. Say you're dealing digital currency, or you're playing in stocks. You can buy one as it goes down cheap, and as it goes up, you sell it. But if you stick all your cookies on one coin, basically it's going to drop because people are dealing with that because they're all trying to bleed it. Well, the same thing with your electronics. It's all trying to bleed your power that you have. So if you say, "Oh no, I don't use solar panels, or I don't use wind turbines," you know, I just use this one. Well, there's days that the sun doesn't shine, so much for the solar panels. Plus, there's nighttime, and then there's days that the wind doesn't blow, that the solar panels take up the gap. Pretty much 98% of all the gaps are taken up with one or the other, and it's doing pretty well. Now, if you're using your static generator or whatever, your magnetic generator, or you're still on the grid, you're pretty much covered. And my point is, in the daytime, you're really not using your lights.
Right.
So when the sun goes down, what are you going to do? You better have some battery storage. That acts as your flywheel. It stores energy and then releases it when the time is right. So, you know, there's a refrigerator out there. This is cool. This is a refrigerator. You can use a computer fan on it, but you don't need to. It's an evaporative refrigerator. It has a tank, like a fish tank of water, and it has a copper coil that they can run water through, or air, I'm sorry, air goes through this. And that's sitting down into the bottom, okay? What they do, they got this rather large funnel, and it bases the wind. The wind blows into the tubing and goes through that tank where it cools the air a little more, and then it goes down into the ground, probably about 6 feet, and it goes through a wider deal where the tube goes back and forth. And while it's under that ground, it cools off even more. And you can get down to around 40 degrees, and you can get down, you can actually get down a little closer to 36 degrees if you put a computer fan up on it and just run that with the solar. But still, even at night, it's cooling as long as the wind is blowing.
Well, my question for people out there would be, why would you want to pay to keep your food cold during the wintertime? Because if you could transfer that cold air out, you know, most people think you're insane if you talk about dragging cold air into your house. But if you had a system designed up with a vent that went into your refrigerator, you could literally drag cold air out during the wintertime, shut your refrigerator off as far as the compressor side of it, or maybe not even have to, because there is a thermostat in there that will actually shut your compressor off whenever the right temperature gets reached. Well, you could
I plug in half the year outside.
All right, well, listen.
It works 100% efficiency all through winter.
You could, during the winter time, have a ventilation system that would retrofit to your refrigerator so that it would be on have a flap there and a fan that whenever it wasn't being used, that the flap would close and you wouldn't be sending cold air in there. So it would be self-regulating anyway, but you could send that cold air into your refrigerator. When your refrigerator got to the right temperature, it'd shut the flap off, and then you wouldn't even have to, the compressor would never kick on. So you could modify a regular refrigerator or freezer, because it gets cold in the wintertime, you know.
And they got flaps on wood stoves that when it gets too hot, it shuts everything down.
Yeah,
and it's the same thing. It's just a bimetal coil.
Bimetal coil spring. You dig on,
you just gotta let the thing unwrap a turn and hook her up there, and that would let your air in and out. Matter of fact, on these solar aluminum pop can heaters, they've got a bimetal coil that controls the flap as well. So if it instead of when it gets too cold and you don't have no nighttime, you don't want to let all your heat back out into those things, so it'll bleed it back off. It shuts it off automatically, and when that flap opens, it hits a dip switch and turns the fan on. It says, okay, start going.
I like what you said about it being automatic. The thing is, it does not automatically install itself, folks.
Well,
the key is when we're talking about saving energy, the LED technology is already there, and a simple retrofit to your existing equipment. Why pay for electricity to run your refrigerator during the wintertime when it's cold as crud outside? All you have to do is move some of that cold energy in through your refrigerator, and it's as simple as a circulation fan. So if you could, there's a market for somebody out there. It's not patented. It's a fresh idea. steal this idea, run with it, take it to market, build a little device that you can hook up to any refrigerator out there to blow air into the air box of your existing refrigerator during the winter time. It'll use something as small as a computer fan, so you're not drawing no voltage to speak of. And it will literally suck the cold air out from the outside in through your refrigerator and then back out the side of the house again. So all you're doing is transferring energy from the cold in through your refrigerator, and your compressor in your refrigerator will never kick on.
Wait a minute. Let's go to a side effect. The side effect of what you're talking about is the fact that you're not running that compressor. Therefore, you're not putting a lot of heat in the coils of the back of the refrigerator. So consequently, you're saving energy there.
Bingo.
I mean, bingo is right. Hit the nail on the head.
And yet people call me stupid.
How damn ignorant, excuse my French, how ignorant can it be to call a genius stupid?
I just like, if you're going to pay for it, then, and you can make it super efficient or even a partial amount more efficient where that compressor never kicks on and you're not pumping heat, you know, which is resistance in your system that you're trying to cool your food down, and all you're doing is taking some cold air out of what's already cold outside. You're already fighting against the cold to try to keep your house warm. Why not take some of that cold out of the outside and run it through your refrigerator and save yourself a lot of money? And the same thing would work for freezers, because when it gets below zero and you're sucking cold air down into your freezer, it's going to stay frozen. You know? It's that simple.
Shaziz, I'm borderline psychic, and I can hear, hear in my head the naysayers that are out there, that wouldn't work. I mean, it's going to cost me $50 and 3 hours of my time. I'm only going to save $50 a month.
$50 a month's a fat wad in my pocket.
6 months down the road, you're making money.
Yeah.
It's all about money, folks. That's what keeps the LEDs from fluorescent light replacements from being popular.
Right.
They're selling for retail. $18, and you gotta retrofit your fittings. It's at one time they're nowhere near that much money.
Muddy talked about
less than $10 a piece. Okay, now all of a sudden you need $10 to retrofit the fitting and put the lights in, but that's a one-time deal.
Yeah, Muddy talked about evaporative cooling, and during the summertime, you could probably use the same retrofit during the summertime with maybe a couple modifications to use a heat exchange to take the hot air outside and basically create cold air.
I just said I'm borderline psychic. If you saw that, I could hear voices in the back of my head. I'd be screaming at me. No, that wouldn't work where I live. It was really humid, and evaporative cooling wouldn't work. Well, okay. You're smart. You're thinking. Evaporative coolers work best in arid climates.
Yeah.
You live in a humid climate, forget the evaporative cooler. It doesn't mean the evaporative cooler doesn't work. It just means it won't work for you. Hey, naysayers, open your mind. Listen to Shaziz. Listen to Muddy. They're brilliant people.
Well, there's also another deal, especially if you got somebody who lives around a spring. Over in Springfield, Missouri, there's this old lake. I don't know if it's still there or not, but it was a really beautiful lake. It's called Crystal Lake. And during the summertime, I don't care how hot it is, in the hottest day of July, you could go step in this water and you'd freeze your butt off. Because this water was like so super cold. It was crystal clear. It was spring fed, and this water was so incredibly cold, it wasn't even remotely funny. Now, doing the same concept, you know, they take old igloo coolers and they circulate cold water through a copper tubing and blow a fan across that, and they got air conditioning. So why couldn't you take advantage of a situation like that, circulate some of that cold water through a tubing, and it doesn't have to be copper tubing. If you're going to just sink it down in there just to draw some of that cold water out and circulate it through, you know, So you're not polluting the creek or anything like that. You're just using it to bring the cold water up through maybe a stainless steel condenser of some sort and circulating it back down and letting it go.
You're opening yourself to naysayers saying, you stupid man, you're an idiot. I mean, that's free energy, and free energy doesn't exist. Because now all of a sudden you got to buy these cooling coils, and you got to buy this fan, and you got to pay for electric. Duh!
You know what I say? You know what I say to those people?
It is free naysayers that you got to get up off your lazy butt and do something about it, and you've got to invest money first to use the free energy. After you've invested the money, then it is free.
You know what I say to those individuals out there that call me stupid over that deal? Go down there, take you a road trip down to Springfield, Missouri. Look for a lake called Crystal Lake that you can see clear to the bottom. This thing is deep in some sections, but you can still see clear to the bottom. Take your shoes and socks off and walk in that for a second and tell me how cold your feet get.
They're much more than a second, maybe three or four if they shiver hard enough.
Yeah. So if you live anywhere near the general vicinity of that, and you can transfer that water in and out through some tubes without causing an environmental problem, then what's the problem of tapping into that cold? You see what I mean?
You're crazy, Chaz. I mean, it's going to cost money to pipe that water to my house. Duh! You idiot.
They make some really neat windmills that actually pump water. You know, they've been doing this for way back in time, back in the old 1800s, and before all that, they made windmills that would, that's it, they pump wells. So you could use the wind power to pump the water through a coil, and then we'll get the guys and gals that say, well, you know, when the wind ain't blowing, the windmill ain't turning, well, then have the solar electric kick in and take up the slack.
Really? That's what money was just saying.
Yeah.
China, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, you know, make a few of them, I'll put them over there in the incubator.
The only reason why this world is energy inefficient is because people just choose to not do it. It's too much of a headache, you know. You mentioned $50 a month. If the average Joe saved $50 a month, that's extra money for your groceries or whatever else you need, you know.
Right.
So if you're using whatever is in the environment around you already and you're using it to your advantage, even if you're only supplementing your income by a quarter percent more money in your pocket than you had before, put you in a better way, you know. That's the way I look at it.
Part of the problem in the United States is the grid, the people who actually produce electricity and pump it into the grid itself, the people, they can't keep up with population growth. So eventually, sometime in the future, we're going to have shortages and outages, brownouts, this, that, and other. And the thing is, people don't realize that, the population is growing faster than the infrastructure. I mean, so if you want to do anything for your kids, your grandkids, start doing it now. The technology is here. For the ninth time in this program, I'm going to say it one more time because I want people to think I'm stupid. Okay? I want you to think I'm stupid. The technology is here. Use it now. What are you waiting for? For better technology?
There's a company.
I think our audience actually listens because they are smart. We don't have to talk.
Can't talk.
You know? Try to talk to them like they don't know something.
There's a company out in Missouri in a lake called Montrose Lake. If you've never been there, it's pretty interesting how this thing is, because this lake never ever freezes. It is in right directly in the middle of Missouri, and it never freezes. Because what they do is they got a power plant up there, and they're not pumping crud into this because it's basically a city government park or whatever, and so they have environmental things that they can't get around. They have to make sure that the only thing that goes in that water is water. But what they do is they use this lake to cool the plant down, All they do is circulate water out of that plant or out of that lake and pump it through, cooling things down, and it stays a pretty much a constant temperature all year round, and so it never freezes, which is pretty cool because in the dead of winter you can go down there and go fishing. You ain't got to worry about no ice to fish with.
Right.
But it's...
The water at our new plant is so pure, it won't support life.
You know, what I don't understand about power plants is that almost every power plant inland uses some sort of a lake, be it natural or man-made, to keep the generators cool. Well, why don't... When the cold water goes in and cools the generator... the generators actually heat the water. The heat goes from the generator to the water, and then they pump it back into the lake. Why don't they pump it through some kind of a filtering system with filtering devices, and they produce even more electricity off the same heat?
They could.
When you heat, you can pump it through a filtering device and make more electricity with the same energy.
Mighty.
Nuclear power plants actually have Stirling engines in them, rather than steam, and they do convert all that. It's just they've gotten so much, that little bit that they're throwing back out there, it's just to circulate it, and they aren't really caring about that. They don't even really care about that drop in the bucket.
Well, right. Muddy, the one that I'm talking about, it's just a conventional power station. It's not nuclear or anything like that, but it does keep the pond or the lake. It's a pretty good-sized lake, too. It keeps it warm all year round.
So what, are they burning coal, or are they burning diesel, or what?
I'm not sure if it's coal or diesel, but all I know is that's what they use to cool down their machinery and stuff. And
if they're having to cool the machinery down, more than likely that's... They're probably not burning coal, they're probably burning diesel.
But people have been fishing there for years, and I've never heard not one single complaint about anybody or as far as environmental problems in that setup. Like I said, all they do, the water never touches nothing toxic. It just goes through plumbing and basically recirculates in and out of that lake.
Yep.
And there's a pretty good-sized fish in that lake. So, you know, either way, it's just talking about, you know, all the different things around you that you could be using. You know, if you're living out there in the country and you got a well, measure the temperature of the water at the bottom of that well. You know, could you use it for more than just drinking water? Circulating that cold water through something?
Right. And look at the trees on the downwind side. I mean, most places have a prevalent direction of wind, and it's like here, most of our wind comes from the south. So you look at the trees to the north of your power plant if you have a south wind, and I bet they're taller, greener, and healthier. They keep talking about this carbon footprint. Well, the trees use that carbon. The plants use that carbon.
Yep.
Well, I'd say that's not a waste. They say, oh, and they're going to tax us to breathe. Excuse me. I don't think that's right. Because we're helping plant life. The plant life's help us. So what are they going to do? Start taxing trees because they're putting off carbon dioxide?
Huh. No, they're eating it.
Well, I mean, because they're putting off oxygen?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to have to give the trees an oxygen tax. In other words, any chemical process or anything that moves is going to be taxed sooner or later. Just like your cars. Yeah, they got the hybrid cars. They made a special tax for them. Then they had electric cars. They made an even higher tax for them.
Well,
outside of everything, because they're not getting their tax through selling the gasoline. Most of your price of your gasoline is taxed. Look at your cigarettes, doggone, yeah, because they got a lot of carbon. Boy, they got a lot of tax on them cigarettes. The cigarettes only cost about like a third.
Guys like Stan Myers caught a lot of flack back in the day for trying to show people more efficient ways to run an internal combustion engine. And, you know, there's... there's been numerous people out there in the alternative energy communities who came up with real solutions that suddenly end up having a heart attack, you know, or
like,
you know, some other unfortunate end to their life, so to speak. But look, I'm not going to let that stop me from telling everybody about technology that's already in existence. It's been around forever and a day. You know, it's just if you want it, you got to use it. That's all there is to it, you know. Going to asking the government for permission, then if you involve the government in asking for permission, then you got to expect the red tape. Oh, we got to find out, ask the EPA, and then you go ask the EPA, and they say, well, go ask the government, you know. Ain't the EPA part of the government? You know, it's ridiculous is what it is.
And they'll tax you for sidewalk wear because your shoes got rubber in them.
Yeah.
Every now and then it releases a grain. Can I give a quick tutorial for those who would like to get into the LED lighting, and maybe they don't have 120 and where they can just screw the stuff in, it's plug and play?
Yeah, man.
Your batteries. If you
while you're in the process of that, I'm going to go refresh my coffee.
All right. Well, if you look at your batteries or look at your car stereo and you look at the voltage, it doesn't say 12 volts. What it says is 13.8.
Right.
Your alternator should kick out 14.2. If it gets up there, it will cut off. And so basically, most batteries, after they've been charged, settle down. Your older batteries settle down to 12.8. That's normal, healthy battery. That's not brand new. Brand new will still have 13.8 on it. So if you're trying to figure out, you got these super bright white LED will have 20 milliamps across it for full brightness, and it will actually start lower. So here's the deal. Seeing as the LED is a nonlinear device and it has a definite breakover voltage, that means until you get to, we put three of them in series. We put three of these in series, we're going to have 10.8 volts breakover voltage. Because they're 3.6. 3 times 3.6 is 10.8. And your battery's going to float somewhere between 13.8 and 12.8, but you want these lights to stay on. And if you've got them at, you got three of them in series at 10.8, and you take it up to 12 volts, you're going to blow them. So how do you keep them from blowing, and how do you get a consistent light out of it without wasting any energy? This is what I'm fixing to show you. You take your 13.8, and 3.6 times 3 comes to 10.8. That is 3 volts difference. 3 volts difference divided by 0.2, which is 20 milliamps, gives you a 15-watt resistor to put in series with it. This 15-watt resistor will make sure that only 20 milliamps goes through it at the high. But when it, say, it drops down to 12.8, so 12.8 minus 10.8 is 2 volts. And if you're running that across that same 15-watt resistor, you're going to wind up with 0.13 amps, or basically 13 milliamps. This light will not show much dimming. It'll still be on. You'll notice that it is dropped in brightness, but not very much. And if you went to a 10-ohm resistor, you'd wind up with your 0.2 or 20 milliamps. I'm sorry, 0.02 milliamps. So anyway, that's pretty much how you do it. You get three LEDs, you put them in order, you know you got 10.8. The difference from that breakover voltage to the battery voltage needs to be divided by 0.02, and you'll have your resistance. And which basically, I moved my decimal point and noticed, so that'd be a 150-ohm resistor. That would give you 20 milliamps. And basically, your light's not going to go dim very much when it gets low, but it's just enough to let you know that your battery's getting low. Okay, so basically that's going to run. Now, when your battery starts dropping even lower, The milliamps is going to drop down even more. You probably get down to about 10 and 8 milliamps, and that's when it starts looking at about half brightness. But don't worry, because your battery hasn't dropped very far. You haven't gone down to 9 volts where you're damaging your battery, and you're fine. So just wait for the sun to come up and start charging the battery again.
Or fill up your helium balloon and let it pull some copper wire up in the air.
Yeah. Bring in a residual static charge on the negative terminal. That'll do it.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about, the high-rise buildings. You can run, I mean, you don't need a helium balloon. Just run some copper wire down the sides of the building.
Just put all your LEDs in series down the side of a building, get you a graphene plate sitting up there and insulate it, and hook the wire to it, put the other one down the ground. If it's too bright, then put your resistor in series.
Building 24 hours a day for nothing.
Hey, when I was designing stuff, rather than putting a set resistor in, we used to put a resistor, a variable resistor, and bring it up to its highest resistance, and then start backing it down until the circuit acted right, and then we measured the resistance, and that's what resistor we put in. Because if you go by calculation alone, you're going to find out the calculation will let you down 80% of the time.
Yeah.
Listen, one of the...
Calculated by the layman or the redneck way of engineering, you'll sit there, you just put in a test, and you start backing it down. You just got to know which end to go to. I usually choose the higher resistance and then back it down until it acts right. And you can do your math and get your actual formula or constant that you can use every time.
One of the things that I mentioned earlier was fiber optics, being able to literally pipe your light from one room to the next. And if you got one light source that can be used multiple times, I would say that would be borderline on pretty good efficiency as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to get the folks out there that are going to be, you're going to lose this and that, whatever. Those guys out there that are taking the water with bleach water so that they don't get all credited up, they're transferring light from the sun into their house, and they're getting basically the equivalence of a 60-watt light bulb inside during the daytime in houses that don't have any windows in them. And they're doing pretty doggone good. They're not paying for lighting. So
if you got 60 watts, basically... and say you're paying 13 cents per kilowatt, that means you get 16 and two-thirds hours per 13 cents.
Right.
So I mean, you could leave that 60-watt light. If you went down to a 50-watt light bulb, you could leave that on for 24 hours for that 13 cents.
Well, using that concept...
Less than a quarter. In other words, it costs you less than a quarter to run a 50-watt light bulb all day and all night.
Using that concept and white
LED strands are 7 watts. Think about that.
Using
how many of those can you run to all 24/7 on that 13 cents?
Using that same concept and white plumbing, you could literally pipe light down into your basement of your house.
Yes.
All you got to do is seal that thing up real good, fill it up with whatever fluid you choose to use, and seal it off. You got light on the other end, and it's just piping light down into the basement, because it's going to work just like fiber optics. There's a reason why they do fiber optic cables, because they can transfer light a long ways. And when it comes
out, mineral oil is the best medium to run light through.
Yeah. Well, whenever they're running the fiber optic light, they got an internet service out there that runs off of fiber optic lights. And so it's going to multiple connections, and it does really well. They're going around corners, up and down, and underneath the ground, and all over the place. They got all these fiber optic cables run everywhere, and they're sending light through these fibers and basically transferring data with light. Now, yeah, I'm saying they do this, and yet you still will have people out there that say it can't be done.
That's because you're stupid, Shazam.
Yeah.
They don't watch your show. They don't listen to the show.
I mean,
our audience is intelligent.
Doing it all the time. It's just people don't know, and they think they know. And the stupidest person on the entire earth is the person that thinks he's the smartest.
Yeah.
He knows everything. If you know everything, then you cannot learn anything new because you already know everything.
That's right. If you go, I know, I know, I know, that means you shut your brain off to input a long time ago. That means you're not intelligent.
Well, personally, I don't want to know everything because life would be boring. But I do know enough to say that if you can light your entire house up with the equivalence of one light bulb, you know, if you got, let's say you got a 150-watt light bulb in the farthest portion of your house and you're using the fiber optics idea to, you know, around that light bulb, you got a bunch of mirrors that are feeding into a fiber optics cable, and you're running it all the way down through. Have you ever took apart one of those little fiber optic, like Christmas tree deals, and seen how they work?
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And there's so many different points of light off of that little Christmas tree, but it's all one light source at the bottom.
You know, you and Scott, both, if you take what we've discussed in this show so far and put it together, it really means something, and I'm going to try to do that right now. You said, well, if a man could save 5% of his electric bill and he could have more money to do other things with his family, possibly even enjoy life a little bit better, well, what if, like Scott said, something about mathematics and so forth, and Scott's really good on math, and the thing is, I am exceptionally good at percentage. Now, if the average business, or the household for that matter, if 60% of your electric bill is lighting, now, if it costs you a few dollars to change all of your lighting to LEDs, you're going to save, just in electric for lighting, 44%. Now, 44% of your electric bill is decreased of the 60%. What's 60% of 40? And this is how much you're actually going to save. But it's going to cost you a little bit of money to do this, because now you got to get rid of all these incandescent bulbs, which are putting off a lot of heat, costing you more money for electricity. For your air conditioning. Think about this, people.
Look at old Ryan Abrams, man. He looked on the side of the road, and here's these two solar panels. They got a crack across them. Big whoopee-doo. Exactly. And he took them home, he hooked them up, charged the batteries, and at night, he said, rather than buying these other lights or hooking up your own, he went and down to AutoZone, or one of them, a car parts place, and he saw these LED taillights. Right. They got several bright LEDs in them suckers. Now, them suckers are like 15 watts, and there's two of them in a package for around $13.
Right.
That means you spent less than 70 cents per light, and these things are bright.
Yeah, and you cut these the red lens off, bright. You have white light.
I've got a
35 watt.
Wait a minute, Scott.
Hold on, let me finish out here. Just give me a second. I've got a 35 watt fluorescent light down at the shop, and it draws a few amps. All right, now I've got at least 35 watts per bulb on these things, and they don't pull near as much amperage. I can have light all night long.
But you're talking retail. I keep trying to say wholesale.
Well, not everybody can get wholesale. Except
what would they cost you to the manufacturer and bought 5,000 at one time?
Yeah. Well, we can't help that.
And then what you do is you have your neighbors buy them from you.
Loan me the money, I'll make the sale, and I'll sell them to my neighbors for sure, and I'll even give you a kickback.
There you go. There you go. I'm talking about the fluorescent replacement, the LED fluorescent replacement.
Yeah.
Already contacted the manufacturer.
Stewart got some of those. Stewart got them. He is surprised. He said them things put out a heck of a lot more light than the fluorescent did at the same wattage.
I bought 10 for samples. 5 of one type and 5 of another. The see, five of them is the ones that, with the clear plastic where you can actually see the LEDs, and the other five were opaque plastic where you couldn't see the LEDs. And I've already fired them up, and they put out an unreal amount of light. Now, I paid a lot of money for them because I only bought 10.
My only question to what I don't know, do they get as warm as the fluorescent lights?
Heck no! They only put out about 20% of the heat of a regular fluorescent. Therefore, you save tremendous amounts of money on just your air conditioning alone.
Yeah, you can read, I mean, you can read the package and all that stuff, but they never tell you about how much, you know, when was the last time you picked out an incandescent bulb and it tells you how hot it gets?
Now, really, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why they put them in the easy bake ovens, because they're actually a device that puts out heat with light as a byproduct.
Right.
And so
very inefficient.
So what if you took a 150-watt light bulb? Have you ever measured the temperature on a 150-watt light bulb?
Oh, I don't know. That dissipated
well,
watts.
If you can cook a cake with it, that ought to tell you something.
Well, I got the layman's explanation on that. We made that hot box when we were doing drywall and metal stud framing. I put a 50-watt and a 75-watt bulb, one on both sides of this styrofoam big hot box we made, and the lid was warping, and we could smell the styrofoam, and we had to unscrew the, I was thinking about unscrewing the 50-watt, but I said, no, let's unscrew the 75-watt. And basically, the next, it cooked our food great. When lunchtime came, it was great. The next day, I had just the 50-watt going, and everybody put their food in at 9:15. Lunchtime came around, and everything was just as cooked. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, just a 50-watt light bulb.
Yeah.
Now, the cool thing is they make these 12-volt 50-watt light bulbs. So if I got a solar panel, and I just lay it down out there, and I put the doggone 50-watt light bulb in there, I've got 50-watt, you know, 75, that was actually a 65-watt solar panel. That means if when the light goes off, the resistance is still going to put just a little bit higher amperage. It's going to get a little bit warmer, but that's okay. If I went to a 60-watt bulb, well, most of the time the sun isn't directly on your solar panel, so maybe that bulb will last a lot longer. So I'm saying, seeing as they're fixing to get rid of these incandescent bulbs, go out and buy you a bunch of them 12-volt, 50-watt light bulbs, man, and make you a doggone hot box outside. And quit worrying how to set up reflectors in the wind and all that goopy stuff like you see on all these other hot boxes. Make you just get your solar panel and a 50-watt light bulb. You can cook the
living fire. Let me ask you a question.
What, yeah, Bubba?
How many watts do you think a 220 volt cook stove uses whenever you're cooking on the top of it?
That's a lot, dude. That's a lot. And if you could just... The secret of the... of the solar type oven is basically the insulation.
Well,
that's
you
in
know,
other words, you keep the, if your thermos will keep your coffee hot forever, just about. And we ain't gonna get into that blonde lady who's how does it know if it's cold or hot? But you know, the main deal is that insulation is the main thing. If you're only trying to heat the food, not the house. Especially in the summertime when your AC ain't keeping up.
So if you know that heat rises and you got a light bulb underneath a metal plate or whatever, and that heat rises, and you know that temperature of that 150-watt light bulb is actually going to be hot enough to cook on, literally you could fry an egg on a light bulb. There ain't no problem.
Yes, you can. A 50-watt light bulb cooks the food just great. 150 watts, oh man, you boil it.
Well, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. Why ain't somebody done a stove like that? I mean, there's a kid's toy that bakes cakes in the toy. All right? So if that could be worked on a toy scale, then why couldn't somebody build a cooking unit stove that basically used the heat off of that light?
Yes. That's what Scott was just said.
Yeah.
Sheetrock years ago, we did the same thing. We just simply took, we didn't build anything, we just simply took a styrofoam cooler and put a light in it.
You guys familiar with heat lamps?
You should have seen how big mine was. Everybody put their food in it, and that same 50-watt bulb cooked all of our food because none of it is escaping.
Are you the insulation is the key to the whole thing.
Insulation.
Are you guys familiar with the old heat lamps?
Oh, yeah.
Man, those things are dangerous, literally.
Yes, they are.
They put off so much heat that they are dangerous. But they still plug into a 110 outlet. Does anybody get what I'm trying to say here?
Right,
yeah. I've seen a 60-watt bulb actually start a fire because somebody put something combustible against it, and it actually lit it on fire. It took a while, but it lit it on fire. So you take that 60-watt bulb and put it in a styrofoam cooler where the heat cannot get out, the heat will build.
That's
and
right.
Build and build and build.
I'm going to tell you something else, and this might freak you. If you build your styrofoam hot box, and at the bottom, you cut a hole. Cut a hole in the bottom of that sucker, and then put you a screen there, and put you a candle underneath. Now, a lot of people say, well, candles don't get too hot. Yeah, well, hold your hand up above it about a foot with the palm dead center where all that heat's going.
Uh-huh.
You will move it because it wants to burn a hole in the center of your palm. It's a straight stream of hot air. That screen will collect the soot and the heat will still go up, or you can just put a plate across there. And all that heat wants to rise, so it's not going to try to stay at the bottom. But everything inside that thing, you might use two candles to cook everything, but it will cook it.
Yes, it will.
I used to have one of them, Dinty Moore beef stew, you know, the processed food stew stuff that you eat that's good for you. I had one of those cans upside down, and I took the church key, and I put a couple holes on the bottom, one on each side, the bottom was the top, because that's where we took the food out of, and so you put the candle in there, and the air comes in and keeps the candle fueled. And on the opposite side, we use two sides. You take the opposite two sides at the bottom of the can, which is now the top, and you put two holes there. That whole top surface will get hot. You can put your coffee cup on there, and I guarantee your coffee will stay hot with a tea light candle.
It'll get so hot you can't drink it.
Well, no, the coffee cup kind of bleeds it off a little bit, and the can does, but it's definitely good enough to drink, that's for sure. It ain't going to burn you, but bottom of the cup was really hot.
No joke.
Kind of like that Stirling engine when I handed it to you.
Yeah, really. It wasn't hot, just didn't take me long to look at it, that's all.
That's right.
All right, well, so anyway, back to the deal. What basically all we've been talking about all this time and what everybody else has been trying to fight for and try to figure out ways to find things more efficient is all we're talking about is moving energy from point A to point B. You know, using a light bulb to cook food with is, it's just so simple, it's just crazy. But if you're talking about the difference between a 220 cook stove and a doggone 110 light bulb, that's a heck of a lot of energy savings right there.
Yes, it is.
You see what I mean? And so,
you know, a lot of people don't realize that it's going to take longer to cook it. But the thing is, when you take it like a roast, for example, the lower the temperature, the longer it takes to cook it, the more tender it is when it is cooked. I mean, so you got a big advantage there. Your food tastes better, it's easier to chew, it's more digestible, it just takes longer to cook it. That's all.
Cut it with a stick.
It's fantastic. It's unreal. One more time, for the 10th time, the technology is here, people. Use it.
Hey, Marty, Justin's trying to get in here with us, so...
I sent him an invite. I hadn't been looking at Knights of the Crown Table.
All right, well, anyway, look, as far as cooking speed and all that, it's all about efficiency. There are exotic materials out there. I mean, heck, they use them in catalytic converters all the time, but once that thing gets hot, I mean, it gets hot and it stays hot. Same thing with the thermos concept and all that. So you can take that energy and transfer it into all kinds of stuff, and... When you talk about an incandescent light bulb, the majority of the energy for the incandescent light bulb is radiated out into the room itself. I don't know if you guys ever noticed, but there is a definite temperature difference in a room that has a 150-watt light bulb as opposed to one that maybe have a 40-watt light bulb. There's a definite temperature difference because that energy is radiating out. So there ain't no reason why you couldn't actually capture that energy as it's radiating out and just use it for something else. So if you built a system to where you could still see the light coming off the light bulb, you not only get the light, but you could either heat water or heat a cook plate or whatever, all off the same energy. So you got a dual or multi-purpose system there. You see what I mean?
You know, think about this a minute. If you take a, for example, 60 watt, 75, 100, it doesn't make a difference. You turn it on, it gets hot, and you dip it in water, it's going to break. But if you put the light bulb in the water and then turn it on, it won't break.
That's right.
But it'll heat the water. So you can heat the water and put light goes through the water, and light, you can light your house and heat your water at the same time.
There you go.
I have taken a car tail light. Incandescent there, and see, you have two different brightnesses, you know, with tail light and brake light. Depends on how fast you want to heat. But I used to make this little wire rack thing that would just hang my bulb over my coffee, and then I'd lower it down till only the glass was in the water or in the coffee. And I'll tell you what, now that will get your coffee good.
No joke, that will.
Yeah, no joke.
Thanks for not dropping it, Raymond. Anyway, basically, you know, if you check out some of the different light bulbs out there, there are like the halogen bulbs. Those things put off a massive amount of heat, man.
Them things will burn your finger from just getting near to touch it.
Yeah, they will. I tell you what, if you took some advice from some of those, if you ever seen them Sun Twin heaters, if you ever took one of them apart and looked inside there, all they are is a halogen bulb tube. There's a bunch of them down inside there, and that puts off the radiant heat that heats up the doggone room. And they're heating with light already, you know.
Right.
And I don't see why you couldn't make that yet even more efficient, just with a couple little modifications here and there. Heck, you could use that same doggone thing to cook something with, you know.
You block the light from getting out, that light gets transferred into heat. So, yeah, it is a heat device. Works well.
And surprisingly enough, plugging one of those in with all those light bulbs inside there doesn't drain near the energy that a regular element-style heater drains.
Allow me to blow your mind with an experience I had. When I closed down the taxi cab and I was fixing to move to Texas, I was the last one there, the only one there to sort and go through everything. And I was there for a few weeks. There was snow on the ground. I had me a nice recliner, and when I laid in there, you know, I'd work when I woke up, and then as soon as I started getting tired, I'd lay back down and I'd cook off this 40 watt light bulb. And when I laid back down in the recliner, if you don't want a recliner, the feet, you know, when you lean back, the feet thing comes up, and there's a piece of material between the feet and the seat part that either you could take out, and some don't even have it. I took a furniture pad and a quilt, and I laid that over me, and I put that 45 watt light bulb on the floor, right underneath where I got the where that hole is. Now that light, the heat from that light would go up, and of course the blankets would touch the ground on both sides inside that metal building. And like I said, there's snow outside. The heat from that bulb would come up, and I could feel it, and it would run. It'd run that little hollow path between the blanket and my legs all the way on up, and I'd be breathing warm air coming out the top. And if I wasn't too careful, I mean, I had to keep uncovering just a little bit to keep from sweating. On a 40-watt light bulb.
Yeah.
And that's the fact. And I was there for like 2 weeks. I traded a bunch of stereo equipment I was going to get rid of anyway because I wasn't going to take it with me for an extension cord that ran across the lot next to me over to this other house. And that's it. And they got a deal.
I got a friend who built his house And before he laid the concrete down, he's got concrete floors all the way through his house. Before he laid the concrete floor down, he runs some plumbing up underneath this floor and basically circulated it back and forth underneath the floor and then laid the concrete down. And the reason why he did that, because we all know the heat rises, once the concrete's set up and he pumps the water, hot water through that floor, it keeps that floor warm. And you'd be surprised at how much different that house is as far as energy efficient, because it's got heat coming directly off the floor itself.
Right, and down below it, you got cold dirt, but it heats that up. But that heat doesn't go very far. It only acts as a store.
Exactly.
So if you stop putting hot water in there, that heat coming off that floor is going to last quite a while.
A long time.
The Romans used to heat their pools and heat their floors the same way, with pipes going through the ground. They'd heat the water and run it through the pipes.
Well, just in the time we've had this show going on today, we've talked about multiple solutions of energy efficiency that if anybody was to implement even a quarter of what we're talking about. I mean, you know...
Well, me and Boomer actually invented a hot suit. And this hot suit would, every time you step down, it would on the levers on your feet, the pressure would actually just spin a little generator, and it would pump the water through the suit on these little thin channels, and it would also heat the water. So you could stay out there. If you started getting cold, that means you ain't moving.
Right.
And we drew it all out, figured it out, did the math, all of it, and basically if you were constantly walking, you would be sweating.
Well, see,
which
and that's
not a good thing.
That technology, NASA claims, pretty much back during 1969, because that's how they supposedly heated and cooled the suit that they were out there on the moon with.
And yeah, so, it would get hot on one side, cold on the other, and all they had to do was move the fluid out.
Yeah, so essentially, look, this technology we're talking about isn't new. I mean, all this thing, even the first plasma reactor that I know of, I mean, there probably was some before that, but the mercury arc rectifier, you know?
You're talking about technology that's 46 years old.
Yeah.
Using.
They've been using time portals since the 50s.
How many people out there are not even 46 years old? Oh, this new technology, my butt.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff's been around forever and a day. I mean, back in the 1800s, they had electric cars, and they were probably more efficient than the electric cars they got today.
And the most efficient engines, called Stirling engines.
Yep. So, you can use everything from heat rising to get motion. You can use everything that nature does to get motion. And that's essentially what we want to do. We want to move energy from point A to point B and get work done. It's as simple as that. You want to stay warm in the wintertime. You want to stay cool in the summertime. Vice versa. And so, just
way
a little
back,
bit of basic science.
They used to tell you how cold the night was by how many dogs you needed to have in the bed. That's where the term three-dog night came from.
There you go, Scott.
Well,
three dogs. Hey.
They let their hunting dogs sleep between them and on both sides.
You guys know what a sad iron is?
A sad iron?
Yeah.
Not a happy iron, I guess.
Yeah, well, back in the 1800s or before, they actually had these irons that they would heat up in the wood stove or on top of the wood stove, and you'd put them at the foot of your bed to keep you warm at night.
Okay. I know what
bed warmers.
Yeah.
Put a few coals in the pan, close the lid, and slide them between the sheets.
Yeah, but it's still basic science and ingenuity. Now, of course, I wouldn't want one in my bed, because my luck, I'd get my big old feet stuck on that thing and get hot foot in the middle of the night. But regardless, when the heating wasn't that good, it still kept you warm between those sheets.
Yep.
You know, and so... A little bit of slight modifications. I mean, they got electric blankets out there. I'm not a fan of electric blankets because they kind of scare me in case somebody manufactured it incorrectly and it ends up getting a short and starts a wire fire or something, you know?
I had a heating pad.
My grandmother used to tell me stories about Well, I'm 71 years old, so my grandmother, I mean, when she was a kid, it was a long time ago. And when they'd take the horse and buggy out in the snow for a snow ride, they would always take fire bricks and heat them up in the fireplace and wrap them up in blankets and put them on the floor of the sled so they put the feet on them so the feet would stay warm.
Yeah, because your body's already circulating blood through your body, and so if your feet stay warm, your body stays warm, and the heat goes out the top of your head, so you keep a hat on so it stays in longer.
And she said they wrap them up really good, those fire bricks would stay hot. I mean, not warm, but hot for 2 or 3 hours.
They used to heat the water in Rome with hot. They put the rocks from the fire into the pool.
You really?
And they boil for a while.
You know, the American Indians, that's how they used to boil their soups and stews. They would take leather and put sticks in the ground in a circle and put leather down, put their soup and their water and their ingredients in, and then heat rocks and dip the rocks in the stew. And they would heat them on a fire. And that's the way they boil. And they would actually boil their stew that way. I mean, people, it's there.
You know,
I mean, your
ancestors. For sleeping at night, two more little inventions. And one I thought I made, but it must have been somebody else because they said so. You could take a 2-liter bottle, dent it just a little bit before you put the cap on it, put it in the microwave. When the dent disappears, it's ready because it's on the edge of boiling. You don't want a lot of pressure, so you turn the microwave off. You take that bottle out, you grab it quick, stand it up, wrap it, lay out a towel, roll that thing on one side of the towel all the way to the end, and then pull the outside over the bottom side over the top side. You know, one layer at a time, just keep pulling it around. And that thing will have heat for hours. You go to sleep with that, and you will not have any core temperature problems at all.
Right.
The other thing they do in Canada is they take kind of this fuzzy fabric, and they make like a small pillow, and they fill it with deer corn. Now, you can put that thing in your freezer. If you don't have electricity, and Doc says you need a heating pad and then a cold pad, and then, you know, well, you put it in your freezer, and that deer corn still has moisture trapped in it, even though it's a solid, hard outside, and it'll freeze your shoulder. Then you can take it and put it in the microwave. When you start to smell something like corn muffins or corn tortillas, and you take that thing out, and it'll have moisture on the outside of it. Man, you just stick it right to your shoulder. Sometimes you have to throw another pad, and I wrap over the top of that. My old lady threw her shoulder out here and got a little bursitis, and I just plop it on her shoulder, and it takes perfect form. It transfers that heat like you wouldn't believe. Now, when they go out, like you get up there towards Canada, where if you set water balloons on the railing, within 15 minutes they blow up like little grenades because the outside froze, and then the inside freezes afterward. It's got such a pressure they actually blow. Now they take these deer corn pads, and they stick them inside their coat, and it keeps their core warm so they can get some work done before they have to come back in.
Right.
Well, basic
science,
man.
Those are very valuable. It's really cheap. Deer corn doesn't cost much. If you like to sew, get you some buzzy doggone material, and you don't fill these things up so they're round. You just fill them up so they're like a bean bag, and then you can sell them things. And the deer corn is real cheap, so
it is.
You can make a bunch of them with one bag of deer corn.
Thing is, it's edible too.
It can be. Boil it. Toss
basic,
it out.
Basic science of all of what we're talking about to keep you warm in the winter and keep you cool in the summer. So, you know, if you want to look for energy efficiency, and you know, I'll argue till I'm blue in the face that energy is free. You just don't know how to move it from point A to point B to get it to do what you want. And if you're not paying attention, then you're not gonna get it. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, the guys out there that's already supposedly got free energy for the world. You know, Keshi out there, he's talking about turning everybody's entire electrical system in their house black with nano coating. I have my questions about that, but, you know, hey, to each his own. I'm not plugging one of those in my house, but, you know, because what if you got aluminum wire? How's that nano coating going to react to aluminum? You know, you get two different things going on there. Is it going to cause a problem? I don't know, but either way, skipping all that crazy stuff over there, just in the basic science realm alone, in this today's radio show, we've already told you how to make your doggone refrigerator more efficient during the wintertime. You don't even have to have that compressor kick on. You know, and if that compressor ain't kicking on, your bill ain't going up. So during the summertime, using some heat exchange, from what you've learned from basic science, you could get your, not only your air conditioner to work more efficient, you could get your refrigerator to not have to work near as hard as well. Evaporative cooling, we talked about that as well. And if you can keep evaporative cooling going on, it's actually cooling down the condensers on your refrigerator, keeping everything from getting hot. The less heat that you got during the summertime on your refrigerator, the less that air compressor is ever going to kick on. So there's a couple saving methods. Just by changing the lighting of your house, whether it be going through fiber optic style like I'm talking about, or LED like Raymond was talking about, or even fluorescent lighting for that matter, or even if you want to still use incandescent lighting. As long as you're going to use that incandescent lighting to do something else while you're using that light anyway, I mean, like Raymond said about heating water with a light bulb, you know, back in the old days, they used to take, in order to move a big giant boulder, they couldn't just necessarily pick it up because they didn't have cranes. So what they did is they built a big old huge fire around this boulder, and then they'd pipe some cold water onto that thing when it got really hot, and it would literally explode that rock into rubble, and then they could move it easily. So those are just some little examples of what we're talking about here. If you're going,
or even to carve mountain passes, they used to just find the cracks and pour water in the cracks and wait till it froze.
Yeah.
Yep.
So using the light bulb idea that Raymond was talking about was that, you know, if you have the light bulb already hot and stick it in the water, it's going to crack. But if it's already under the water, it's not going to crack. You're just going to transfer that heat from the glass of the light bulb into the water, and you're going to heat the water while you're using the light. So you'll still be able to see the light. But you're also taking that waste energy and doing something constructive. So if you have a system set up to circulate this into your hot water tank, your hot water tank has a temperature regulator as well. And so whenever your temperature of your hot water goes down, then the regulator switch kicks on the coils and heats up your water. So if that coil never kicks on, and all you're doing is burning one light bulb to keep that from never kicking on, then you're obviously using less energy in order to keep your water up to temperature so that you have hot water to take a bath or whatever. So, you know, all of these things, little simple concepts, remodifying, or if you're starting to build off a new structure or something and you want to bring your house down to the most efficient way possible, there is so much information out there on how to do so. Everything from insulation to using the sun outside, or even like I mentioned, who would have thought you could use the cold air to keep your refrigerator from kicking on? You're trying to fight that heat, or you're trying to fight that cold to keep it outside your house, when in reality, you could pull some of that cold inside your house deliberately and keep your compressor from coming on.
You know, I like the you mentioned insulation. That is a pet project with me, and so many people, because I am into construction and I build things for people, and especially in commercial or these drop ceilings, I've had hundreds and thousands actually clients. Will give me an R11 insulation in the ceiling. I can't afford R19, sucker. You can't afford not to put R30 in your ceiling. The higher the R factor, the better the insulation. The higher the R factor, the more it costs. But I don't care what R factor you put in it. I don't care what the cost is. The cost is totally relative. I don't care what insulation you put in. It will pay for itself in 1 year.
Yep.
You earn R25 in the doggone thing and heat your house with a 40-watt light bulb.
A higher R factor is going to cost you more money, but it still pays for itself in 1 year. After that year, that's what you're saving every year. If you put $1,000 in insulation in your ceiling, it's going to pay for itself in 1 year on your savings, and then all of a sudden you're going to save $1,000 a year every year for the rest of the time you live there. Now, spend $500 worth of insulation, it's going to pay for itself in 1 year, and all you are going to save is $500 a year for the rest of your life.
Yes.
I mean, come on, people, think about it. If you can't afford R11, then go with R30. It costs more. Find a way to find, hunt for, look for, do whatever you have to do. Put as much of R factor as you can possibly put, whether you can afford it or not. It will pay for itself.
Yeah, essentially what Raymond just got through telling you is build your doggone house like a thermos from the get-go, and you'll keep your heat in when you want it, and you'll keep your cool in when you want it.
Exactly. Exactly. Insulation is a pet peeve of mine. It's a pet project.
Everybody
on insulation.
They build your houses inefficiently. They build your appliance inefficiently. And there's no reason why, you know, even after you already have an existing structure, that you couldn't go out and get some of the, because I guess it's really awesome foam these days. It comes in 4x8 sheets, maybe even bigger. You could actually tack that to the outside of your house, re-side your house, and now you just increase the efficiency of your heating and cooling by magnitudes. My father-in-law has a pole barn that he took and did exactly that to. And so he took a wood-burning stove, and he burns little sticks inside this wood-burning stove, and it will literally almost up and run you up out of there. You, in dead of winter, you only got a t-shirt on inside his pole barn.
Yep. Man, there's so much people can do if they just stop, relax, took a deep breath, and thought about it. They could save unreal amounts of money and use that savings to provide a better life for their family, more time to enjoy their family. It would just increase the quality of life so much. People, they have no idea how much happier they would be if the quality of their life was increased by 50%. And that 50% increase in quality of life is so simple if you just think about it.
Hey, Muddy, there's three more people that want to come in, I think. Are you there?
Three more people? Look like you got 3 minutes. Are we going for 3 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Go for it.
All right,
so we got we got him. And
Patrick and Palopsy.
Palopsy's around. Well, I'm going. We can't go without having him on.
Anyway, folks, we're going to take a quick music break. You're listening to Mad Science, and we're going to go into the Overdrive Hour. So I hope you're enjoying what you're hearing, and I hope you're benefiting from the knowledge. So stay tuned. Peace and love. You're listening to Mad Science.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Bye.
Interrupt this tune for a brilliant message out of the chat room. Barry says, who needs a fridge up here? Just stick it in the snowbank. Back to the music. Peace and love, everybody. Listen to Mad Science.
Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to
boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
That's right. We got a ruckus going on over here in the Mad Science Show. So while we were on break and talking about all kinds of brilliance, we got a couple more individuals joined us in here. We got my friend Zerius the Centrist out there, another brilliant mind out there. We got Justin Aldridge in here, another brilliant mind out there, and we still got Muddy and Raymond, and thought we was going to have Patrick for a second, but him and Steve kind of took a hiatus or something. Maybe they're on vacation. So anyway, the realms of Mad Science, which one of you, was it Justin that was talking about build your house out of bricks, make it more energy efficient?
Out of stone.
Yeah, out of stone.
Stone.
Yeah, that's bricks. Stone's right. A good insulation, you know, and there's all kinds of different types of ways that, heck, that you did it way back in the day. They used mud for mortar and all kinds of different stuff, you know. And somebody told me, I think it was Muddy was talking about last go around, was talking about papercrete or something like that.
Yeah, papercrete.
Yeah, so
about 65 pounds of newspaper, and you got a big old tub, and you just beat it all up in the water and until it tears up, add your concrete and or your Portland, and whip it up, get as much air into it as possible. Matter of fact, they use a old pickup bed type trailer with a water trough on the back and a lawnmower blade as the mixer. And they just drive around the block about 2 or 3 miles an hour, and it whips it up real good. And there's you can actually put a little bit of dish soap in there, and that'll really make it foam up and get like a big old aerated block. The block weighs probably about 1/4 of the weight of something its size, and still strong. And the cool thing is, it's bulletproof.
I tell you, one of the houses that impresses me a lot, they call hobbit holes. You guys familiar with that term?
Oh yes, definitely.
Yeah, they build these things in the side of houses, and so surrounding you, the earth is your insulation. You know, and it's brilliant. You know, take a look at the cave, for example.
Build the house in the side of the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so you don't have to worry about a whole lot of stuff. Basically, just using the natural medium of it. And if you do like what Justin and you was talking about with the stones and the papercrete or whatever, you could actually get it to look real good inside. You know, it'd be a brilliant look.
How do you make papercrete?
Yeah.
65 pounds of newspaper, shred it up as best you can. Put it in the water in that big water trough that you got on the the pickup bed trailer, and you turn the axle so the yoke points up, and you mount a lawnmower blade on it, and it whips it as you drive around the block one time at about 2 to 3 miles per hour. You get back, and it's time to start pouring it in your molds.
With the existing technology that we've got right now,
you can cut it with a saw, and you can carve it, you can do whatever you want, and it works great. You just basically let it sit for about 2 or 3 hours, then you can remove the boards off the sides of the mold, and let it sit for 2 or 3 days, actually about a week, and then you can start building with it.
you guys crush up some rock and throw a little bit of sand in there to help it out, or is it just like...
No, you don't need that.
Or is it going to look great?
There is the whipping action that Scott's talking about puts air in it.
Yeah.
The air is the second best insulation you can get. The best you can get is a vacuum. The second best is air.
Barry says hempcrete.
I'm inviting him anyway. He says he's not a scientist.
Well, neither are we, are we? Yeah, I'm a mad scientist. So, either way, there's all kinds of different materials that you could use out there. And with existing technology in your hobbit hole, you could literally put three HD cameras or four HD cameras facing in all directions and put windows in your house underneath your hobbit hole. So you're looking at a flat screen TV and you can see everything outside just like looking out the window. So...
You know, I like it.
It'd be pretty neat. And pipe sunlight in for your lighting and stuff. And so you wouldn't even be paying for lighting when the sun's up. And then during the night, you'd be using LED technology or whatever you want down in there. And so you'd have more than enough lighting. Staying warm in the summertime wintertime would be easy. And staying cool in the summertime would be just as easy. It's a pretty cool idea, man. Perfect home from start to finish. Build it in the side of a hill.
Yeah.
Well, you guys.
Or, Barry,
it sounds in a way like recycling paper. I wonder what ingredients you could add to that to make it more more solid, even.
I don't
know. The way I'm looking at some of this, look, if I build this geodesic dome, which is 25 boards, 11 hubs, it's about 3.5 inches thick because of the 2x4 measurements. After doing that, you put a board over the inside of each of these triangle sections, and then you put a board over the other spot and just leave a hole at the top to pour that crete into and let it harden up, and then to take them off, and within 2 weeks that thing is bulletproof and it's leak proof.
Well,
and it's very, very thermal. Now Barry was talking about the hempcrete there. I don't know if you have you had any experience? Have you ever tried any hempcrete there?
Are you talking to me, buddy, or are you talking to the group in general?
I'm basically talking at you. Have you ever played with hempcrete at all? Or you just
I haven't seen any being used up here yet, but I'm promoting it. I'm talking to people about it. I mean, hempcrete is a natural progression, man. It's like the answer. Period. There isn't a better product we can make right now to build houses with. The stuff doesn't burn.
Yeah,
and what better, the house immediately we would stop logging, man, because we don't need lumber. We do not need to cut down trees, period. You can make 2x4s out of the same theory as hempcrete, and they're 3 times or 4 times as strong as a 2x4, will last 700 years and don't deteriorate. Everything we're doing, all our building materials, our 2x4s, our 2x6s, all our panels, everything could be done with hemp.
Corporation would rather chop the tree down instead of letting you have cheap hemp, because cheap hemp makes like 5 cent products, and that makes 55 different products, fuels and derivatives to clothes, to insulators, to lots of different things, flammables and whatnot.
Well, the whole thing of what we're talking about reminds me of the three little pigs scenario. You know, there's got one little pig built his house out of straw, and one little pig built his house out of sticks, and all of us here on this panel are talking about building it out of bricks, you know. So
hempcrete.
Yeah, hempcrete. Hempcrete bricks.
You see, the wolf has something called the pig rat, though, that tries to stop you from making stuff like that, because the pig rat wants to get rich off of you.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf, Bubba?
I'm not. See, that's why you go down inside your basement and you build you a bootleg hempcrete factory and start pumping out bricks. And so when the jackboot thugs come rushing in to try to see that you got some weed growing on and it's already in the form of bricks that you're building a wall with, you know what I mean?
Hey, you know, it's really easy to make it legit if you can find a way to make hemp without the THC. If it's like THC-less content.
Basically, the hempcrete is, what is it, 0.05% THC, which is well
below the limit.
Well, go down along the Missouri River. There's tons and tons of fields of bunkweed growing down there that you could just chop down and make your doggone bricks with.
Sell me an acre, she said. Sell me an acre.
Barry, could you substitute the hip with kudzu?
Kudzu?
Is that... Kudzu grows 18 inches every 24 hours. It's legal.
We should actually experiment with noxious weeds, because anything made out of carbon could be just like hemp, and we could find out it makes another type of 55 products, kind of like that weird, what is it called? That like weird corn stalk thing that grows up that's like a noxious weed that like has healing properties to it. I can't remember the name of it.
You mean hydrogen properties?
Yeah, well, it's got all kinds of properties. It's made out of carbon, obviously. The whole planet's made out of carbon, but like...
Well, pretty much everything is helium or hydrogen. If you want to get down to the basics of it, all atoms are made of helium and hydrogen.
Well, yeah, it would
that's
be
how your sun works. It goes from one process to the other.
Well, either way, the so-called mainstream science and politicians out there trying to make the whole planet illegal because we're surrounded by carbon, yet carbon supposedly, according to the EPA, a waste product, a trash, a toxic, whatever, you know.
Yeah, it makes the trees grow really fast, which puts out too much oxygen in the air. Yeah.
We don't want oxygen, no.
No, we have to tax the trees for oxygen.
Oh, see, if everybody holds their breath, you can save money on carbon tax.
Yeah, that's what they want right there. They just want to keep charging you money. That's why they're trying to patent up the planet.
Well, have you ever seen that little cartoon called The Smurfs?
Yeah.
Well, that's what you all going to look like if you start holding your breath to save money on carbon tax.
That makes perfect sense.
You're going to look like a smurf.
That reminds me of two jokes. Number one, how do you kill a blue elephant? You shoot him with a blue elephant gun. How do you kill a pink elephant? You choke him till it turns blue, and then you shoot him with a blue elephant gun. What about the oxygen high here, folks?
Not
well, how do you catch a unique rabbit?
Unique up on him. Yep.
You gonna catch a tame rabbit?
No.
Tame way.
Okay.
Now that my brain's hurt and I've lost some IQ points. Oh man.
If I could build a geodesic dome, put the wood on the inside, use it as the form for the brick. I'd have big, huge triangle bricks that are actually fastened to, and I could actually probably put some bolts through the 2x4 or some rebar to hold the thing together, and all I'd have to do is seal the edges, and I'd have something that's bulletproof and thermal. And if I used hempcrete, it'd probably be stronger than steel.
And if you did a little bit of research ahead of time on the land that you was fixing to purchase to put this house on, you wouldn't have to be worried about a flood zone. So we build it up in a hill. It's obviously not a flood zone. So,
research, all you got to do is look up, and you say, that's where I want to live.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something. Buddy,
that's why I live where I do. I'm on the second highest hill around here.
Buddy's
it's got rain big time, and there's flooding. People call me and ask if I'm all right. And I said, nope, my boat's not floating yet.
Well, even if you choose to live in a flood zone, I've seen it down between the Missouri and the Illinois side. There's houses down there, and they're literally built on stilts, and they are like basically boats. When the flood water comes up from the river, the house raises up, the garage raises up, the electrical and everything raises up with it, and they take a boat to the shore and go to work. And so if they can do it there, then they can do it anywhere.
There's a friend of mine in Hampton, Virginia. His house is built on stilts, but the stilts are not fastened to the house. Matter of fact, he's got some poles beside the stilts, and he's got rings on the house. So if it ever does flood, his house above the stilts, the house raises, and the ramp just changes angle, and the end of it will float so that you can walk out onto it and get on the boat.
Y'all familiar with Venice? Out there where they got them big old long gondolas that they float around in down the street?
Oh, you Vena.
Yeah. Vena thought he said dentist. I say no. He's a dentist.
No, I'm that. Talking about the part that they have essentially where all their houses float. They build entire blocks, city blocks, on top of the water. There ain't no land mass to speak of where they're at because they're in a flood zone. But man,
I thought they had concrete bases underneath the ground.
Well, they probably did at one time and probably still do, but for some reason it decided to flood down there and the water never went down. So, hey, instead of giving up, they just kept on building on top, you know. So there is technology out there that allow you to build your house even in a flood zone. It drives me insane because all these, we talked about building the houses out of sticks and bricks and all that kind of stuff. They build these houses out here, especially down in Tornado Alley, where essentially if a 200 or 300 mile an hour wind comes through there, you ain't got a house anymore. So knowing that you're going to build a house in Tornado Alley, wouldn't a geodesic dome sound a little bit more like common sense because that wind would wrap around that dome and the house would still be standing after the storm?
Exactly, same as a Quonset hut.
Yeah.
The wind will go right over it. It will not affect you. Something has to slam into it.
So I don't think we have an energy crisis. I think we have a common sense crisis. Common sense. Yeah.
But it's definitely a common sense crisis. Hey, speaking of water, underwater, under the ocean, there's a lot of pressure. If we built some kind of reactor that was using water as the boiling substance to make a steam pressure to be able to make a steam engine off of to generate energy, you've got this steam rising. I was thinking you could make sort of a gravity generator by putting a long tube with a spiral that goes back, and you open a little hatch with like a little piston in there with magnets on it through a electromagnetic spiral tube, and the water pressure just shoves this little piston through, generating a lot of energy from the water pressure, and it goes all the way to the end of the tube, and at the start of the tube that little hatch closes and drains this water into a reactor room where in pressure, and then the steam pressure rises back up into another container where it uses that to generate more energy, emptying out the tube so they can push the piston back with the steam itself even, and then they can let the steam rise up through the water through a big tube up into the atmosphere, and they can just generate a lot of energy off of gravity doing this. There's a lot of processes to it. You can actually sort of over-unity off of gravity. I just don't know where this energy really comes from.
Have you seen a blueprint on this?
Well,
no, it's sort of my design.
So, look, we've been doing this for years, and I keep saying this, like I keep telling everybody, it's not a new concept or anything. The way that we use energy right now, we're not, according to their own laws of physics, we're not creating or destroying anything. All we're doing is moving energy from point A to point B. Like, it's easier to move water if it's in the form of steam. So you take that energy and you change it into a different form, which is steam. Now you can move steam a lot easier than you can water. So the same thing could be applied with electricity. So I'm talking about taking your already standard generator right off the store shelf, building a device to take that energy off that generator and putting it into a completely different form of energy and moving it on down the line and then recombining it. I mean, it's done in your car, it's done in your house already. You're already doing it. There's heat exchanger units out there that are doing all kinds of stuff. And all it's doing is changing the form of that energy from, you know, the electricity that comes out of your socket and changes it to heat or light or whatever. All you've done is change the energy. You moved it from point A to point B. The problem with the standard setup is there's too much waste going on. So
I just took gravity and generated energy off of it with a tube, though, that spiraled down.
Well,
and then you just push it back. You push it back with steam, and then the steam goes up through a tube through the water up into the atmosphere. You just keep using the steam as it rises against itself
so
to generate more energy than you're capable of generating off of gravity itself.
Draw out some Hold on a second. Draw out some concept designs of it, and we'll post it on the deal for people to take a peek at. Because any idea out there is a good idea, as far as I'm concerned, as long as somebody does something with it. There are thermal vents all over the planet. There's lightning going off all over the planet. There's like extreme pressure underneath the water, like you were talking about. When that water's not just sitting there. There's a lot of pressure down there, but there's a lot of waves and undersea currents and stuff like that. Imagine a Peltier element shoved way down in the, not Peltier, but a piezoelectric crystal shoved way down in the depths of the water. You're going to get pressure on there, and if there's any motion in that water whatsoever, that pressure is going to be fluctuating, so it's going to flex that little piezoelectric crystal and release some sort of energy. So, man, it's just too simple.
We can't forget about Boomer there. I mean, he's been a great student and a follower of Veljko Milkovic, who actually, in one of his articles, stated Boomer's Raymond Head's name is knowing more about it than they did. And this is the man that plays with gravity and gets 13-1 over Unity.
Yeah, with his that what do you call that device, Boomer?
Dual stage oscillator.
Yeah. Two-stage oscillator. That's pretty doggone impressive because, you know, if you were standing over there trying to lift the weight on the opposite side with your bare hand, you'd get wore out right shortly. But you're able to, once you get this thing going, just kind of reach out there and tap it every once in a while to keep it going. And it wouldn't take much.
Yeah, while you're doing that, your feet on the ground are feeling massive energy.
Yeah.
Vibrations.
It wouldn't take much.
That's a whole lot more than your thumb could do to the ground. And he's still extracting 13-1 over what he puts in.
It wouldn't take much to put a small electric motor on there to replace the motion that you're doing with your finger.
You're right. I already done it.
Yep.
So, the only reason I didn't video on it and show it is nobody would believe it.
I'd believe it because I've seen how the thing works.
The energy pulses don't exactly run a generator, right? Even with a flywheel, you have a big risk of breaking chains. You'd have to get bigger chains. Next thing you know, you'll be bending the arbors to the sprockets and gears and stuff. So, we invented a way to extract the energy so it would flow a little more continuous instead of in slam bang. You know,
that's where the brilliance. The brilliance of all the people out here doing this research. If combined together, what Raymond was doing and all these different motor generator technologies out there. I mean, the X13 is a motor that has been proven to pulse at about 9 volts. Ryan Abrams did it. He pulsed his motor at 9 volts. That's got more than enough right there to replace
the
finger
motor.
But
the output of the machine is in quick pulses, and it still raises so much weight, so many inches more than it did on the input side. So what we determined and decided to do is make a pump every time it goes down and comes up, because that's mainly what these things are good for, is pumping water with very little energy. So we're going to pump the water up very high into a good-sized reservoir and then use the continuous downflow to run the generator.
There you go. Zerus was talking about, letting gravity circulate the water down. There's multiple things you can do with that on the way down. The Lord Kelvin device, falling water, releases a static charge. And so why not take some of that static charge off and charge up some capacitor banks to boost your battery on the other side?
If you want to pump up water up high, all you have to do is put a little generator down there and steam pressure it and generate energy off of it. And then as the steam rises up into the container that you wanted to pump it up high into, it'll just condense in there back into water. Instead of using energy to pump it up there, you can gain energy off of it, pumping it up there with steam.
Well, there you go, man.
Well, as it's waste energy, if it's not waste energy, you're using the energy you're trying to get to the end and deliver.
Serious. Why not, instead of steam, use hydrogen and oxygen to pump the water?
There you go.
Take a chill cell, put it in a container, a sealed container with water in it, with a pipe at the bottom. Let the chill cell make hydrogen and oxygen. Build the pressure, push down on the water so it goes up a pipe 200 feet in the air.
Yeah.
100 feet in size, pump water 200 feet.
Does it generate energy? Does that cost energy to do?
Wait a minute. It costs energy, but you've got the hydrogen oxygen, and you now have water 200 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And get back 25 cents.
And you know what they say, what goes up must come down.
Uh-huh. For me.
So you
if you have a reactor and you steam it up into 200 feet in the air, you can steam it up as high as the clouds are. You can steam it up into a pressure room, use some electromagnets to generate energy off that pressure, and then that steam will rise up into 200 feet in the air.
If you can insulate
it clean, it'll be cleansed water.
Yeah, if you can insulate the pipe enough to keep the temperature up so it doesn't turn back into water.
Yeah, but if you're going to have a pipe 200 feet in the air, you might as well pull a static charge off the atmosphere with it as well. So there you go. Take that static charge and shoot it down into a capacitor bank. Dump that over into some batteries for your electrolysis process to make your doggone hydrogen.
Yeah, well, that steam is also inside of it, and that would condense back into water, creating a light static electric anyway.
Yep.
So plus, if it's steam, you could sort of put thermoelectric pads on the 200-foot high tank to suck all the heat out of the water to condense it faster as well.
Yep.
Exactly.
That's still energy.
Pumping water up into the sky instead of just pumping it up with a pump, you could just generate energy and let the steam go up there for you.
But everything, once again, that we're all talking about is just moving energy from point A to point B and getting work done. It's just the most efficient ways that you do it. That's the whole key to this entire deal.
Shaziz, that's the 11th time that you've said that, and I think, honestly, a lot of people aren't listening to you.
It's conversion and transportation.
From one point to another, from point A to point B, folks, listen to Shaziz. All you people out there that say he's stupid, you're ignorant. You're not.
All the people out there say he's stupid ain't listening to this show.
It's just the people not able to see with their mind's eye because their mind's eye is blind and they have to see it with their physical eyes to believe it. That's all. You know, Shaz is obviously a genius. They're just clouded up in the head. I mean, I encounter these people all the time, and they make me wrathfully mad. All the time they make me wrathfully mad.
When I look at a problem such as the lens effect, the back EMF that everybody's trying to overcome and trying to make things run more efficient, and then I ask the simple question is, this generator is going to put out this much energy at this many RPMs, no matter what. No matter what you do, once you got this thing to its maximum potential, that's how much energy you got in that generator. Even when it's not under load, that energy is still waiting and ready to go. The moment you flip that switch, it automatically makes a return path right back to the generator that turns around. And that lens law kicks fully in, and that thing acts like a brake, all right? So, if you can keep from flipping that switch by taking that energy off that generator, allowing it to flow into, I'm just saying, noble gas or whatever, any of the inert gases out there, you still have the same amount of energy that generator had. It's just in a completely different form. It ain't no different than changing water to steam. You take you got high voltage pressurized plasma inside there, and you can take that energy and you can move it away from the generator in something as simple as a form of heat, you know, because heat creates plasma. Light is heat, heat is light, vice versa, whatever. All I'm saying is that if you take and build a system like that, you can take your standard generator, you can move the energy away from the generator without ever invoking Lenz's law. Send that energy on down the line, and then you can condense it or whatever back into whatever usable energy that you need to run the inefficient junk that we've got going on right now.
And I've got a video on YouTube that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt exactly what you're saying. I took your idea and took the second old burner igniter, and I lit 15 32-watt fluorescent bulbs with only 48.2 watts. That's four 2.8 watts per 32 watt bulb. Now, camera did not show 1/5 of the actual light I was getting off of. It lit up my entire backyard. 15 32 watt 4-foot fluorescent light bulbs, 20,000 volts, 48.2 watts. I mean, come on, Shaziz. I did it. I've got a video on it. It proves you are 100% correct. And anybody calls you stupid or dummy, they're idiots. Because it's there. I've got it. It's a video. It's on YouTube. It's there. It proves you are right.
If you look at the last
anybody who is willing to call Shaz is stupid or something like that is obviously a fool, because obviously Shaz is out there trying to improve the quality of his world, therefore improving the quality of their lives, and all they do is stand in Shaz's way by calling him a fool. I mean, I don't even understand why people are foolish enough to do that to Shaz, because Shaz is
why waste your time?
Their lives?
Exactly.
You're standing in the way? I mean, I don't even get that, man.
By calling somebody a fool doesn't make you smarter, and it doesn't, you're basically wasting your time. The guy is still intelligent.
This last
yeah, you know, Mr. T. Pity's the fool who calls somebody a fool, because all you're doing is being a naysayer and standing in the way of somebody who could actually be teaching you one thing, like something to avoid, or another thing, something to do, and like, calling the scientist, even though, like, you know, I don't know, it's like discrediting somebody, even though he doesn't have to be discredited, like... Shaziz could change the world if that person didn't call him a fool, but instead he called him a fool, and Shaziz didn't change the world because everybody else believed him, and that's idiocracy right there.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. This last video that I did, I showed something pretty brilliant in there. Of course, it's got a thumb down on it. I don't care about that, but the thing is, the video is called Energy Transfer, and in this video, you can literally watch as I took a dead fluorescent bulb and transferred that energy from the generator through that fluorescent bulb and lit up a tungsten element light bulb. So, essentially a bulb that wouldn't work in your normal lighting system, used as basically to generate the plasma to transfer that energy from one end of that light bulb, that fluorescent tube, to the next, and actually light up a 150 watt tungsten element. And the key to watching this video is two things. First off, listen to the difference of how that electric drill that I was running this with. When I first kicked it on with just the tungsten element light bulb itself, you could see that, physically see that buck really hard. But whenever I did it with the fluorescent bulb in series with that tungsten element, you could see a drastic decrease in how hard that drill had to work. And not only did the light bulb, the tungsten element light bulb, light up brighter than it would have if it was just on regular current, it also lit up that fluorescent bulb brighter than it would on traditional current. And I actually had to try to cover up one of the light bulbs so that you could see that both of these light bulbs are lighting up. I did it in the video. You could see I put a paper sack over top of the tungsten element first and lit it up. You could see the fluorescent lit up. And then I put the paper sack over the fluorescent. And if you watch really closely in that video, you will literally see that light bulb shining through that brown paper sack. All right. Now, when's the last time you ever seen a fluorescent bulb that bright that could literally shine through a brown paper sack?
Right.
So, you know, whoever thumbed that video down, I don't understand why they thumbed it down. I mean, it's to each their own. If you don't like the video, that's fine. But if you're just going to discount the anomalies that I keep showing in all these little videos, then you're going to miss the big picture. And the big picture is this. There are easier ways to move that energy, you know. And, you know, when I talk about free energy, man, I get people crawling out the woodworks just to tell me what's what. But the fact of the matter is, when's the last time you got a bill from the sun, or the wind for that matter, or the creek, or the rivers, or whatever?
Suzette, anytime you get a negative comment or a thumbs down on your videos, you just have to, what you have to do is just take a deep breath and say, okay, there's one more anal retentive person out there. I mean, come on, don't even pay attention to them. Only a fool argues with a fool. Don't even argue with these idiots. You are a genius, you're brilliant, and all of your friends that know you and understand you and understand what you're saying and shut their mouth long enough to listen know this. So don't even pay attention to the idiots. Don't even let them even so much as waste 5 seconds of your time paying attention to them.
Well,
stop bringing them up in subject. Fine.
There's two things that you can do. You can either walk up the hill or you can ride the bus. It's your choice.
Yeah, here's the deal. Most of these well-known trolls are kids.
Yeah.
They haven't studied yet. They're just looking for attention. So, I mean, why waste valuable airtime, video time, comment time, and all that to give them notoriety? That's what they want.
Exactly.
They've obviously got a rough life. Sorry for you. Usually I try to combat back and try to make it sound like they said something positive and congratulate them and I'm done. And if they want to come back and do it again, then I just get rid of them. And that's it. I will not spend the time. There's valuable air time that's being talked about how people are stupid. And I don't like to do that. It insults the audience just talking about one person, making it sound like it's everybody else.
Right.
To me, that's enough said because I don't want to become the dummy myself.
Yeah, I
exactly.
Those trolls and whatnot, they're just hypocrites. That's all they are, man.
Either way,
they don't even know what they're talking about.
The only reason why I brought it up or whatever is that
we spent probably about 30 minutes of the show talking about
it. We're talking about moving energy from one place to the next as efficiently as possible to reduce the so-called greenhouse gases, which everybody out there who knows me knows how I feel about all that stuff. And not even defying the laws of physics. We're not even talking about defying the laws of physics. We're not even talking about zero point or over unity, even though California has already passed legislation by 2017. All existing structures have to be zero point, which means they have to be able to produce their own power, whether it be solar or wind or renewable energies of any kind. And here we are on this mad science show, week after week, giving out away for free, not asking anybody for any money to do any research or anything like that. We're giving the information away for free to the world to take the ideas and run with it. You know, it's as simple as that. The idea that I mentioned earlier about taking cold air out from outside during the winter time and keeping your doggone refrigerator from kicking on. If that doggone compressor never has to kick on, then you're going to save money. Take that idea, run with it, go out and patent it in your name, get rich with it, and just get it out there on the market.
Yes.
I don't care. I'm not here to get rich. I'm not here to get famous. I'm not here for notoriety. All I want to do is something that I feel needs to be done. That Tesla got ripped off. He tried to give the world free energy because he believed that if he got the free energy to the world, there wouldn't be no more wars over oil and resources and such. And there, Stan Myers, same exact thing happened to him. He designed a car that would run on water, and he ends up going too. There's a guy that was doing a magnet motor had a decent electric car going, suddenly he's gone too. So all these guys out here who keep on trying to help everybody out seem to keep on getting done in. And I'm sitting here giving all this information away to everybody and his brother for free. And it's not all my information. It's also information that I've done research and that Raymond and Muddy and Zerus and Justin and everybody who's came onto this show has been giving away for free to everybody. They've went out, took the time to go out and watch videos and do research and give you all kinds of ideas. Everything from heating water to heating your house and lighting. And there's alternative medicines and all kinds of stuff to get talked about. The information's out there. And you got to do it.
Yeah, and also if anybody out there, like you perhaps, or the listener, wants to be a hypocrite or a naysayer, you always remember that you are your world's inhibition. Like, you are holding your world's back by just saying no to it when you yourself don't even know for sure.
Yeah, we're not talking about trying to sell you anything. We're not trying to sell you any designs to any free energy device or anything like that. We're pointing out ideas that you could take yourself and you can test in your own lab and then be the debunker. And then, you know, when you got some plausible science to back up what it is you're denying before you even try it. I mean, if you save your money on, even if it's only 5% on your light bill by taking one light bulb off the power grid, that's a plus in your favor. And that's a plus in the world's favor if you believe in the whole carbon debacle, which I don't. So if you take any of these ideas and you run with them, you get filthy, stinking rich, or get all the notoriety to your heart's content, who cares as long as the idea is out there for free to the public? You know, hey, more power to you. And that's the whole key, right? Power to the people. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about basically using your mind for something other than a mush factory, if you know what I mean.
I mentioned earlier about the LED fluorescent light replacements. In fact, I've got 12 light fixtures, fluorescent light fixtures in the ceiling in my shop. I'm ordering today the replacement bulbs for them. I will be making videos and putting them on YouTube, on my website, YouTube, which is rhead100. And if anyone that wants to know how to retrofit can watch my videos. I will definitely be putting them on within the next 10 days. And I'll show how to retrofit them. I mean, in detail, so no one will make a mistake. There are two different kinds. One kind is your input and output, or your negative and neutral, is on one end of the bulb. The other type of bulb, your positive is on one end, your neutral is on the other. I'm going to do both videos on how to do that. So we're not just giving information and words. I'm actually going to make these videos. I'm going to take my time and my money to buy the bulbs and show people exactly how to do it. Then I'm going to turn right around. There's 48 bulbs. Fluorescent bulbs. I'm not going to put them in the trash and load the landfill with mercury and all kinds of poisonous gases. I'm going to film and stretch them on cable outside and fire them up with Shaziz's idea about the oil burner igniter. And I'm going to fire them up and show people that you can light 60, 80 bulbs with less than 50 watts. You can light it up with less than 4 watts per bulb. And light a whole yard. I intend to do this with all within the next 2 weeks. So if
I need to
watch
my
kitchen space.
Mine just went.
It's going to be Shaziz's idea. Every bit of I tell people Shaziz is a genius.
Well, everybody gets a chance to. Go out there and just look for one anomaly in that video called Energy Transfer that I did. I just want you to see for yourself a fluorescent light bulb shining through a brown paper bag. Alright,
yep.
And when you see that, drop a comment in there and tell me, when's the last time you've ever seen a fluorescent light bulb shining through a brown paper bag? So,
hey, you forgot to tell them, the bulb burned out.
Yeah. It don't work in the standard system. And so, instead of, like Raymond said, instead of throwing it into the dump and adding more toxins to the soil in the general vicinity, reuse the doggone thing. A fluorescent light bulb will last forever if as long as you don't break that seal inside there.
Yep.
You know? So,
exactly.
You know, if you got a light bulb, a light source that you can use, and you know that we can light it with high voltage, we've done it. So many times it ain't even remotely funny. But,
really? I remember when I was up at your place here a couple months back, you and I lit up that those fluorescent lights that were totally burnt out, would not work in a standard fixture.
Yep.
I mean, wouldn't even work, wouldn't even glow, wouldn't do anything.
And right? The same thing that I'm talking about by using the plasma to move that energy around, you and I did with the fluorescent bulb starters, where you could actually see the difference between the energy as in the plasma state and the energy as a direct contact to the light bulb. When we lit that fluorescent bulb starter up with that generator, at 450 volts coming up out of there, the moment that that doggone thermal switch kicked that, closed that circuit, and that light bulb came on, not only did that light bulb burn super bright, but it also dragged that generator down to the dirt.
Yep.
There's the difference.
And I can tell you, folks, it was over 400 volts because it put a hole in my arm.
Yeah, he accidentally put his arm on the wrong section of the deal, and he got lit up. And I was like, we should have got that on film, because that's what he wanted to do, is get me on film getting shocked. Oh, man.
Get a ball. That was 5 days of the best vacation I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, it was wonderful having you here, Raymond. I can't wait till Muddy and some of the other guys get to come down and hang out a bit and do some experiments and show people. You know, all we're talking about is moving energy from one place to the next and doing it as efficiently as possible. And we're not defying any laws of physics or any of the mainstream science, guys. Well,
if it for the laws of physics, what we're doing, we couldn't do it.
That's right. Exactly. All we're doing is using the same laws of physics to our advantage as opposed to our disadvantage.
I have no desire to defy the laws of physics.
When you heat up water to the point of steam, you still have the same exact amount of water. It's just spread out. That's it. It's the same thing. It's still water. Still has all the same materials in it. And so you move the water via steam from point A to point B. It doesn't matter. It's going to get there because it's pressurized. It's the same thing with electricity. You've taken...
The thing is, you not only moved the water from point A to point B as steam, but the heat that you put into the water to turn it into steam, you have taken it in the same direction. So, exactly what you said, from point A to point B.
Yep, and one thing, if you notice this, go look back and look at some of the old steam boiler systems, and check out how those work. Not only are they pressurized and steam, but if you go around there and touch one of those pipes, let's say you got a boiler that's going at 650 PSI or 1250 PSI, not only is there a massive amount of pressure behind that steam, but you also do not want to touch the pipe.
Oh, Lord, no.
Unless
you're
a stovepipe hugger.
Yeah, if you're a stovepipe hugger, go ahead.
One time, and we were insulating a high pressure steam pipe. It was 800 psi. I mean, the temperature was unbelievable. But the pipe was like 8 inches in diameter, and there were these OSY valves. OSY means open stem and yoke. But anyway, we had placed our two buttons from one valve to the other so we could stand on it and insulate this pipe. And as soon as we got it set up, they already had 6 inches of halo insulation on them, on the valves. We put the 2x8s on about 5 minutes before lunch. Before we could go to work, we said, hey, well, let's go eat lunch. Well, we came back 30 minutes later, and the 2x8s were burnt completely in two and laying on the ground on fire.
So
that's how hot it
was. We're down to the wire, guys, so with all that said, The biggest complaint in the energy department is losses. And what we've pointed out here is the only reason why you got losses is because you just refused to use the waste energy, such as the heat from a coil of wire. I mean, you got an electric motor that's going to get hot anyway. Why not circulate some water through there and kind of help your hot water heater along if you're going to be doing it anyway? The water never comes in contact with electrical, so you don't got to worry about getting shocked or anything. And light bulbs, they're producing heat, so you're using the heat. That's all there is to it, you know?
You can always put that heat back into energy with thermoelectric pads. I'll probably make a couple of schematics for you guys to see what I'm saying with those thermoelectric pads and increasing their value.
Yep, there you go. All right, guys, it's been the Mad Science Show. Look, all I'm saying is this. There's only losses if you choose to not use it. The devices out there, it's just up to your own imagination what you could actually accomplish. If you could actually get the brilliant minds to the table in the lab and start doing the work and getting it done, There wouldn't be no such thing as losses. Because according to their own specific laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where is it going?
There you go. I'll back that up. You know, try to prove it wrong.
Yeah, that's it.
Place to use it at. Here's my point that I've been waiting to come across, and I know it's the end of the show. If you can't afford to insulate, then you can't afford not to. That's number one. Use your energy efficiently. If there is a loss or a waste, then you know, try to find a way to convert it and or use it. It's like my coffee pot. In the wintertime, I leave my coffee pot on. I'm not wasting it. The heat is actually going into the air. My lights, I wouldn't worry about turning your lights off in the winter.
You could put
but in the summer, don't try to cook in the mid part of the day while you got your air conditioner blasted. Go ahead and eat a sandwich at that time. When it starts to cool off and the AC isn't doing much, you can open the door, cook then. That way you aren't using high wattage of electricity on two ends fighting each other just so you can warm up a little piece of food.
Somebody design a lampshade out there to put over your 60-watt light bulb with an old percolator-style coffee pot mounted on the top of it so somebody could cook their coffee and use their light at the same time.
That's right.
You could always thermoelectric pad your house like that weird bodysuit that Shaziz was talking about that heats up more and more as you sit in it. You can always thermoelectric pad the hot side of an AC unit.
Yep.
Take that heat back into energy, and you just produce only cold with it.
All right.
You can take a ceiling fan alternator and go ahead and pump it down to your ceiling fan in your house.
Yep. We got to go, guys.
Take out there, bringing it in. Use existing what you have.
We gotta go, guys. Thanks for your brilliance, and also those air conditioners. If you go outside while they're draining off or dripping out cold water, imagine that. All right, I'm just saying. All right, peace and love, everybody. Thanks, guys. You've been listening to Mad Science Show. Stay tuned for tonight's round table tomorrow. If you guys want to join in, we got a whole lot more room to talk. Take care.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.